as usual. I love the beast, I said before I could stop myself. Clearing my throat, I rushed on. Do you recall everything you say and do as a beast when you're transformed in the morning? I asked, somewhat hopeful he didn't remember holding me last night. My insides ignited and soared at the memory. I recall more, because my senses are heightened at night. Are you really as bad as they say? I faced him. He turned to look down at me. Do you need me to say it again? Yes. It was getting harder for me to recall what he was when we were together, and I needed the reinforcement. Then I am twice what people have told you. His gaze didn't waver, and I felt no tingle to indicate he was lying. My heart fell, and with it, my mood. I didn't know how to respond. I had held out hope that there was some goodness in him, that the rumors were false and the fear of the masses misplaced. But he was every bit the monster people believed him to be. We gazed at one another in silence, and a familiar pain stung me. I didn't want to lose Mismatch, but I couldn't associate with a man like this. One who tortured, slaughtered, and mowed down whole forests with no concern for who might be hurt in the process. One whose sizzling look managed to drive every sensible thought out of my head and make me too aware of the hardness of his body, the incredible reflexes. Stay away from me, Adonis, I whispered at last. Night and day. Turning away, I retreated to the bench in the shade where Leandra sat. I felt his gaze on me and sat with my back to the crowd. You have a lover's quarrel with the Sisa chief? Leandra said with a small laugh. We don't get along. She rolled her eyes. When a man looks at you like that, you're beyond the getting along stage. Whatever. A warm flutter ran through me. I suppressed it quickly, determined not to be associated with him. He's a murderer, Leandra. Even if you were remotely right, I couldn't be associated with him. He saved your life in the arena. He's a bad person. Maybe he had a reason. I glanced at her. What reason is there to slaughter hundreds or thousands of people? I don't know, she admitted. He's bad news. I get it. But he looks at you like there's more to his story. Sometimes I hated how smart Leandra was. You guys have a thing? She pressed. No, of course not. I'm doomed to be alone. You all used to steal boys from me, but I'm starting to think it was a good thing. If I've learned anything since leaving the forest, it's that I can't trust anyone, ever. You have us. You're a spy, I exclaimed softly. For you, she retorted. Heracles, you are his world. I clamped my mouth shut. Leandra's attention was on the guests. Supreme Priest is kind of creepy with that mask. Yeah, I twisted to follow her gaze. Lantos and the Sisa chief were talking privately apart from the crowd. Whenever I thought of Lantos, I recalled the Oracle. Studying him, a new idea formed, and I rose. Leandra scrambled after me as I approached the two. Their talking ceased, and they looked at me as I neared. May I have a word? I asked Lantos. Of course. He stepped away from Adonis to join me. Leandra lingered behind. We walked for a short distance into the gardens, away from anyone else, before I was comfortable enough to speak. Will you take me to see the Oracle again? Lantos was quiet, his eyes the only part of him visible from beneath the mask. Please, I added. I don't know how else to go see her if you don't help with the shadows thing. My instincts tell me I'm not going to like this answer, but for what purpose? He asked. His cheerful voice and sparkling eyes made him so much easier to talk to than Adonis. Not your concern. You learned those words from my chief, he chuckled. I have the choice to take you or not, based on your response. Perhaps you should try again. Fine. I want her to tell me how to use my magic. And that's a lie, I growled in frustration. It's partially true. I want to kill her. His eyes widened. To put her at peace, I continued. You speak to the Silent Queen and come away wanting to murder the Oracle. Can I assume the two are linked? I saw her, Lantos, I exclaimed. I saw what they did to her, what they'll do to me. How can I leave her that way? If I were her, I'd beg for someone to kill me. He began walking again. I went with him, agitated. There is a flaw with this plan, he started. Aside from accelerating your fate at the hands of the magistrate, you'd also risk exposing me while simultaneously chopping off my ability to draw off my power. I'm connected to the same place the gods are. You said you want them to suffer. You had to know that would mean losing your power, too. At the right time, Alessandra. At a time of my choosing. A chill went through me. What if that time is after the Oracle dies of natural causes? Are you willing to let me meet that fate? It would be temporary, and of short endurance, if so. Only until I can ensure the passage of... we'll just say something important from the other side of the portal. I stopped walking. It's not what I want. Adonis has taken to you, and I want to respect my friend enough to spare you, he admitted. If you throw your friends into the arena, they're probably better off without you, I said, a surge of protectiveness flying through me. You're not helping your case, he chided. My hope is to be in position well before her natural death. But I'm not willing to expedite it. He won't help me. Not unless the timing is right. The skin around his eyes crinkled in a sign he was smiling beneath the mask. Trust me, Alessandra. I showed you your fate when no one else would. I've protected you since you were a child, and you know my motivation to seeing the gods cared for properly. I ask only that you give things time to fall into place. It'll work out, I promise. If I do this, if the Oracle dies soon, he'll see me crucified. I said nothing, understanding too well what he meant. Don't look so dour. There's plenty of champagne and beautiful bush creatures to amuse us, he said, and slid his arm through mine and walked me back towards the party. The more I thought about it, the better idea it was to help the existing Oracle find peace. Even so, he had presented a problem I didn't think through. I didn't have anywhere to go if she died and I was next in line. Except, maybe. My eyes went towards the villa in whose gardens we were. The Silent Queen had a network of some kind, a plan for rebellion. I wanted to think she'd be willing to protect me if the Oracle died. But I was learning more and more that I couldn't trust anyone, even those who seemed to be willing to help. In the end, they were out for their own purposes, and I was a means to an end. I wanted to believe the Silent Queen, but I was afraid to. I had to break away from these people. I had the magic needed to fend off entire armies, the survival skills to live anywhere, and the ragged red cord needed to hide from even mismatch. A different kind of plan began to form, one that fit my own purposes rather than those of everyone around me. Escape, after giving the existing Oracle peace. I'm ready to go home, I told Leandra as we rejoined the party area. Should you turn off the monsters first? Glancing around, I saw guests gathered around the creatures. Nah, they seem happy. And I hope they eat some of these people. Leandra trailed me as I left the gardens and walked around the villa to the covered sidewalks. I want to run away, I told her. I don't blame you. No, I'm serious. Leandra drew abreast of me and met my gaze. To where? That's what we need to figure out. Somewhere they won't look. Outside the walls, then. Yeah. That's risky. If they found you in the forest, they'll find you wherever you go. But I have my magic. I'll keep learning to use it. Even if they do, I can make them disappear like I did the Typhon. True. She was frowning. Didn't you talk to the Silent Queen about her plan? Yeah. But Leandra, every one of these people wants me for their purpose. To play a role in their plan. No one is looking out for me. The image of the Oracle was in my head once more. Just like no one is looking out for her. They only want what she can do for them. Who? The Oracle. Leandra was quiet for a long moment before speaking again. I understand, Lissa. I don't disagree. But you need to consider the idea the Silent Queen might be a better option. One that helps us bring back the old ways. The wisdom in her words held me in silence as I reconsidered. She was right. But so was I, to want my freedom. On the surface, the Silent Queen appeared to be the best option I had. And you need to complete your trials before you can access all your magic. Think about it. Do you want to be caught outside the walls by a desperate god? Leandra advised as we entered my villa. No, I answered. You've had a rough go of it lately. Try to see your situation with less emotion. You always make sense, I said moodily. The buzz of alcohol had faded, and I was starting to feel heavy. I'm going to take a nap. Leandra left me at the doorway of my bedroom. I changed quickly and dropped into bed, troubled and needing some alone time to think. Chapter 19. Love is composed of a single soul inhabiting two bodies. Aristotle. Later on, I was on a journey to explore the villa, to find some shred of insight into Cecilia's life when Leandra found me. You have her guessed, she said. Ugh, who? I leaned back from searching beneath the bed in one of the guest bedrooms. And you're in jeans. Great. She eyed the designer jeans I'd uncovered in the massive closet. I was barefoot and wearing the most dressed-down blouse I could find. Probably someone you don't want to see. There's a million people on that list. Adonis. And he's number one. Can you tell him I'm, I don't know, dead? He's the Sisa chief, Lissa. Whatever is going on between you two, you need to keep in mind he's in a powerful position. We might be able to use that. Over my dead body. But I rose. Fine. I trailed her out of the bedroom. I steeled myself to tell Adonis to leave and walk away. Entering the foyer area, my tongue stilled when I saw him in his black uniform once more, the one that clung to his muscular thighs, displayed his flat abs, and outlined the shapes of his shoulders and biceps. In the end, I stopped and stared at him, speechless, long enough for him to beat me to it. Not that it mattered. Nothing he could say would sway me from my intention. Care to spar? Except that. I crossed my arms. You have an entire organization of people to spar with. None of them are as fast as you. A trickle of pride slid through me. Okay, meet me in the garden. I spun on my heels and returned to my room to seek out clothing for the event. And then I sprinted from my room to the door leading to the garden. Not because I wanted to see him, but because... Well, I did. It was impossible to deny it. No matter what I knew about him, I didn't want him completely gone yet. Slowing, I exited into the garden and finished tying my hair into a ponytail. He stood ready in the stone courtyard at the center of the garden. Adonis said nothing, but lowered into a fighting stance. With a deep breath, I did the same. We began to warm up with slow movements, lazy strikes and soft blocks. I half expected him to speak, but he didn't, except to offer advice as we sparred. Warm-ups transitioned into bouts of heated combat that galvanized me. I was angry with him, at my world, at everything. I fought him harder than I had in the CISA building. I was soon sweating in the late afternoon sun, focused on obliterating his guard, or at least beating myself against it until I could no longer think or feel. His technique was flawless, his reflexes otherworldly. It was easy to let go, to unleash every last ounce of conflicted emotion and channel everything into physical struggle once again. In the end, he'd win. I knew this. But I didn't care. We went on for an intense hour or two. My breathing grew ragged, my movements lethargic and tired. At long last, he put me out of my misery and pinned me. An arm bar around my neck, his thighs locked around mine, I was immobilized on top of him, facing the sky with him between me and the ground. I went limp and tapped out. Adonis released me, and I rolled off him onto my belly. He remained on his back, breathing hard. Sweat dripped down my neck and soaked the roots of my hair. "It won't work. Next time," I said, between breaths. He didn't ask what I was talking about. He already, and always, knew. "Why are you here, Adonis?" I asked and pushed myself to my knees. "Really?"
"To spar."
"No." I felt a ping. "That's not true. To spy on me for Lantos?"
"He told me what you wanted him to help you do."
He rose and held out his hand. I accepted and let him pull me up. "And he told me, if I end up crucified so he can get whatever it is he wants from the other side of the portal, he'll have me torn limb from body."
"He has his reasons." New anger tore through me at the calm claim.
"His reasons," I repeated, "because that's all that matters."
"There's a lot at stake."
I started away, furious I'd been drawn in again. After the arena, I wanted to believe there was a part of him capable of being good. "Alessandra," he caught my arm. "I'm not going to let anyone do that to me," I snapped and pulled free.
"Neither will I.
You disobey your boss?"
"Lantos wouldn't take it that far."
"You doubt the man who threw you into the arena out of a hissy fit?" Adonis was too smart for this. "Your loyalty blinds you, Adonis. He claimed he would. Whatever game you're playing, stop."
"No game. He sent me to tell you his intentions to protect you."
"Ah, another deception from Adonis. You didn't come to spar of your own free will."
"If I recall correctly, you told me to stay away."
"And yet you're here."
"I was left dissatisfied with your command."
No ping this time. The tension between us was of a nature I didn't understand. Thick and energized. Ripe with promise, despite our sparring. The urge to put something between us was back. "I meant it," I managed.
"I don't think you do."
"I don't care what you think." Adonis twisted me into knots. The words were difficult to say. "Don't come back, Adonis."
"Alessandra," I waited, arms crossed, forcing myself to recall all the bad news I'd heard of him to keep from remembering the human parts that left me raw, vulnerable to him. "I don't want this," he said finally.
"Then stop being you."
The moment the words left my mouth, I heard how cruel they were. "I'm sorry. I mean, I know who you were once. The creature who saved a child because you knew she was in danger. I don't know who you are now, Adonis, and that terrifies me. I can't let you in my life." My voice quivered. "Do you understand why?" "Because you're afraid of me."
I nodded.
"You have been hurt by too many people, and you think I will hurt you too."
Gods, when he wanted to be, he was so sweet.
Lethal, yet sweet. The combination was perfectly him, and so complicated and confusing. I was starting to panic. I waited for him, willed him to say more, but he didn't. This time, when I walked away, he didn't try to stop me. My victory was bitter. Even I had to acknowledge I didn't really want him gone. Part of me hoped Mismatch didn't listen, even if Adonis did. But he did. That night, after I pulled on a t-shirt for bed, I turned off the lights and waited for him to appear. Mismatch didn't come. I stayed up as late as I could and fell asleep feeling sad and angry with myself for it. No Grotesque perched on my balcony. I was alone, and it hurt more than sending him away. Chapter 20. The Grotesque Prince. A man's character is his fate. Heraclitus. The second the last golden ray of Hesperides left the sky, I began to hear them. Thousands of voices, they filled my head. Subtle whispers, and sometimes louder yells turned into a form of soothing music. As I flew into the air to hunt my dinner, they were joined by memories. The voices felt like they belonged. Old friends returned, even if I didn't understand who or what they were yet. But the memories were strangers to me, from a different time and world, of a man who had been buried deep inside me for too long. A man I didn't know anymore. The voices drowned out the memories as I flew over the central temple of Artemis. I was drawn to her temples without understanding why, and this night, many of the voices seemed to originate from there. Hovering over it, I decided to stop and walk among the grotesques and gargoyles, as I often did. I dropped to the ground and folded my wings, tilting my head to listen.
"Welcome back, brother."
"Where have you been? Did you not hear us asking you to visit?" The stone statues were speaking. Each had a voice. I walked from one to another, to yet another, listening to his or her distinct voice, before stepping back into the center. Spotty before this, the memories began to flow more rapidly, of the day Alessandra visited this very temple as a child and awoke me from the stone. Twisting, I spotted the platform where I used to stand and cross to it. No other creature had taken its place.
"I'm from here."
The words were a growl when I was in my monster form, but I needed to hear a sound from outside my head to help me focus. The stone creatures around me were excited and drowning out my ability to think.
"How is this possible?"
The voices fell silent, and I closed my eyes, sensing the answers in my own head. This time the memories hit me with such force I was driven to my knees. Gasping, I rested my clawed hands on the roof of the temple. These weren't recent memories, but those of a life long past.
"Don't fight them. They're a part of you. Let them flow."
The soft female voice came from behind me. Too overwhelmed, I hadn't noticed the priestess approach. She wore the glassy-eyed look of a woman in a trance. Her body was stiff, and she didn't even seem to breathe. Only her mouth moved. I had seen this before. Gods and goddesses spoke through their respective priests and priestesses, possessing the bodies of the willing to send messages.
Artemis? I growled.
"Yes. It is time for you to recall who you are. What you are." With some apprehension, I did as she said and allowed the memories to flow. Mycenaean Greece, 4,000 years ago. I rode my warhorse along a beach whose white sands were soaked with red from my latest battle. Victorious, I'd once more defended my kingdom from the sea raiders from the south. The last rays of sunlight reflected off the armor of the army at the other end of the beach. I rode away from the army for the sole purpose of relishing my victory, rejoicing in the bloodshed of the enemy and the crushed hulls of their ships listing in the bay.
Another great victory that will be spoken about for years to come, said the priest beside me.
Had you any doubt? I replied.
Never, Your Grace. The Oracle of Delphi foretold your victory.
I smiled. My kingdom was enjoying a golden era of wealth, military conquest, and glory.
You have doubled the size of your kingdom. You will conquer all peoples by the time you are 25.
I will leave the world to my heirs.
The first of which I bring you news. The child is a boy, the priest added. Healthy and strong like his father.
The gods bless us. I smiled. An empire, a son, an army unlike any that had ever been created. I would be the one to realize the dreams of my forefathers.
They do. He is likely the first of many of the servants and slaves you've taken to your bed.
You wanted heirs, I said with a wink.
One will suffice.
His grave features were even more serious than before.
The Oracle believes he will be as mighty as his father.
Good.
Which leaves us to the final message I wish to impart to you.
I glanced at him. Final? He was elderly, but not yet near the age when men died naturally in their sleep. At 17, I was a feared warrior, not about to die in my sleep either.
Artemis has seen your battle and requested your service.
Artemis? I echoed. The goddess of women? Not a mighty warrior like Ares. After each battle, I was summoned by a god and usually given the location for the next battle, and advice for defeating my enemies. We worked together, the gods and the bloodline, for the glory and power of my kingdom. Artemis was not known to favor battles, though, unlike some of the other gods who were constant benefactors. I was curious what peoples the goddess of women and hunting would have my army conquer next.
She offers you this.
He handed me a small pouch. I accepted it and dumped the glowing teal gem into my palm. Holding it up to the dying sun, I admired the sparkle and facets. Flawless, fit for a king, I said in approval. Tell her I will go where she wishes. The priest bowed his head.
We thank you, Your Grace.
He left me in peace to ponder my next great battle. I listened to the ocean, in case Poseidon sent word through the waves of enemies trapped in the bay in need of slaying. The sun sank beneath the horizon, and an immediate chill seized me, tickling my toes and traveling upward through my body. I felt stiff, despite the battle lust still in my system, and glanced down at the toes that suddenly didn't move. They were gray, and the strange color and stiffness was climbing up my body.
Priest! I bellowed.
My thighs, hips, lower back and torso was soon too stiff to move. My fingers went next, and it raced up my arms and shoulders, finally swallowing my neck and head. I fell from the horse, helpless. I couldn't even blink.
The curse of the bloodline, came the priest's sad voice. The price for the blessing of the gods.
My eyes opened. The memories flooded my mind. Scenes of previous victories. Of battle. War. Blood-edged politics and strategy that explained my ability to see what others didn't in the manipulative maneuvering of the triumvirate. And then, there were the 4,000 years frozen in stone, where my mind and senses were alert in my role as temple guardian, even though my body never moved for 4 millennia. I looked anew at the others around me, understanding why I resembled them, why I was comfortable visiting them, why we were connected. Horror spread through me, and I crossed to the nearest grotesque. It told me the answer without me asking.
2,000 years. The one next to it had been frozen for only a few hundred. I was surrounded by my family, bloodline, forefathers and heirs. My heart twisted inside me to recall what it was like to be among them, and then the ecstasy of the first breath I took after Alessandro awoke me. Phoebe. I froze in place. I had been 17 when I sired a child. The silent queen, a descendant of mine, was 18. But the image in my head was of her as a child, close to Alessandra's age when she woke me.
"Do you remember why the queen is silent?" Artemis asked through the priestess.
"Because I told her never to speak, so the priests couldn't trick her into the curse. She was supposed to remain mute until I returned for her." I was struggling not to feel, not to let the emotions inside me take over. I never returned. That was 12 years ago.
"She's never spoken since."
I said nothing, overwhelmed by the idea I'd let a little girl suffer for 12 years. I dealt with Phoebe as the queen, neither of us knowing who the other was. As a child, she knew only my mismatch form, and I had been forced to forget everything about her. The protective instinct surging inside me was the same I felt for Alessandra. It had first emerged in the responsibility of a ruler charged with the welfare of his people, and was later tempered by my duty as a stone guardian of a temple. Ingrained into me, I didn't understand its source and strength until this moment.
"You were hurt. Lantos saved you. Your memories were likely deemed dangerous," Artemis said, pulling me from my thoughts.
"Lantos wiped my memories." I saw these images, too, of him erasing my mind as I lay helpless and dying beneath him.
"You once swore to serve me."
An oath that turned me to stone. I faced her.
"The oath to me did not do this. Your word was given to fight a battle on my behalf."
I was struggling to contain the beast side of me that wanted to fly, to lose itself in physical sensation.
"Lantos is your friend, your master, but he's not your ally when it comes to a particular issue.
What exactly would you have me do to fulfill my oath? Kill him?"
"No. I'd have you protect Alessandra."
Alessandra. Another thought occurred simultaneously. "She can save them." I motioned to the members of my bloodline trapped forever in stone.
"Not yet."
I paced. "Then our purposes are aligned. Protect her so she saves my kind. Protect her so she saves all peoples." Anger was crowding out my surprise. The gods and their priests had cursed me, and every ruler of Greece for 10,000 years. What did I care for her cause? If I protected Alessandra, it was because she had truly acted out of a desire to help me, and in doing so, had lifted the curse on one monster otherwise doomed to an eternity in stone. If she did it once, she could do it again and stop this nasty curse that imprisoned feeling, thinking, sensing men and women in stone. "I don't care about other peoples," I said at last. "I owe them nothing."
"And Lantos?"
Lantos wasn't bad. He was driven and desperate enough to use Alessandra in a way neither of us wanted, simply to reach his end goal. Without my ability to strategize, he looked for the quickest method to succeed, no matter what the risk and cost ultimately was. Erasing my memory. Sending me after Alessandra when he knew what she was to me. They were the means to his end. I didn't fault him for doing what he felt necessary. But I did fault him for his insistence earlier this day that phase two was the only option we had. "He's a misguided friend," I replied. "One whose purpose no longer serves mine."
"I hear the voice of the ruthless prince of Greece you once were."
I touched my forehead. The familiar headache was back. "That man is dead. his brashness tempered by 4,000 years trapped in stone. I have no desire to become him again.
But you may need to, if you are to take your place in this prophetic end of times.
I lifted my head, liking our discussion less and less. Alessandra is the oracle. I'm nothing to the triumvirate, and Phoebe is the current heir to the bloodline and crown.
What place does a rogue monster, awoken by the good humor of Tyche, hold in prophecy?
The place beside her. I don't need to tell you this. You felt it since you became reacquainted. What I'd felt had been too unclear for me to understand, except that I knew I couldn't let anything happen to Alessandra.
How deep that dedication ran,
whether or not it was more than gratitude and fidelity for her rescuing me, I didn't know. But I suspected it was more than I was ready to handle at the moment. You're wrong, I said.
Then let me prove it to you.
Artemis sat on the back of one of the stone creatures.
Do you remember your real name?
Of course, it's... I stared at her. I recalled every moment of my life before being stone, every military campaign, every slave I slept with, even the names of politicians I'd ordered assassinated, and my forefathers for 100 years before me. Adonis was a name given to me when 2 police officers found me in an alley shortly after Alessandra awoke me. But it wasn't my name. Not originally, at least.
Your name is written on a plaque, buried beneath the beach where you turned to stone. A memorial of sorts to the great warrior prince, Artemis said. Go there. Find it. Tell me what else is written. When you see it, you will understand.
Usually it was me who toyed with others, but the goddess was having her day, or perhaps more accurately, her latest day the past 4 millennia, to play with me. I didn't like it one bit, and I didn't have a choice either. If I wanted to know what secret she hid, I'd have to do as she said. What of Alessandra? I asked uneasily. She's not safe here.
No, she is not.
And I fear her fate will become much worse soon. Like you, she needs to learn.
Those lessons will be painful.
Then I'll stay.
You can never truly help her if you don't find the plaque.
I clenched my jaw. A goddess was offering to help me for reasons I didn't understand. This same goddess was the only one rumored to be trapped on Earth who hadn't spoken to Lantos. And she wanted me to help Alessandra, the person who could awaken the other members of the bloodline, and perhaps prevent Phoebe from being turned into a temple guardian. My personal feelings held no place in this discussion. I detested being manipulated or lied to. I hated being sent away from the action, knowing full well I left Alessandra in danger.
I have guided you the best I can the past few years, she added. Like Namazne, I have spoken to you as well.
Through Mrs. Nettles, I asked. The double possession. The sense that Mrs. Nettles was 2 people living inside her, one of which only responded to flashy items. The other was wiser. Different. I wish you all would leave her alone. I had no way of knowing if my longtime companion experienced pain when overtaken by a goddess, and I loathed the knowledge I'd been spied on.
The faster you go, the faster you return, she baited.
I will do it for them, I motioned to the statues, and for her, not because I gave you an oath.
Very well.
My head snapped in the direction of Alessandra's villa, and my body went rigid. It wasn't yet comfortable to feel what she did, despite teasing her about it. Fear slid through me. Her fear. Followed by her pain. Without saying another word to the goddess, I leapt into the air.
Chapter 21. Alessandra.
I am not afraid of an army of lions led by a sheep. I am afraid of an army of sheep led by a lion.
Alexander the Great. It happened too fast for me to react. Hands yanked me out of slumber, bound and gagged me, and tied a hood over my head. Hushed voices were too soft for me to understand, and I was slung roughly over the shoulder of someone I didn't need to see to know how big he was. His jarring gait smashed into my ribs with each step, waking me further. Immobilized, I did what Heracles had taught me and trained my senses on anything I could identify. Sounds, smells, touch. And I tried not to panic. It was one thing to be tossed into an arena with a monster and provided weapons. It was something else to be blinded and helpless. I hated the feeling of being out of control of my own body. I identified four people by the different pitches of their voices. I was slung into the back seat of a car that peeled out fast enough for me to be pinned to the back seat. Struggling to make sense of what was happening, I heard two men in the front seat. They'd bound me with duct tape, and I almost smiled.
Noob move. Heracles had trained me for this too, for getting out of bindings of almost any sort. Sometimes I wondered if he knew what I'd face one day, or if his paranoia was simply paying off. Face planted against the seat and seatbelt fasteners jabbing me in the ribs and thigh, I stretched backwards until I could reach the tape around my ankles. With some embarrassment, I realized they'd snagged me in nothing more than underwear and a t-shirt. I wasn't even wearing a bra. It made me hate them more, whoever they were. I prodded the tape with my fingers, searching first for any tears I could exploit, and second for any single layers that would be easier to rip. I found one and ripped it. Duct tape was the easiest of all bindings to get free of for the simple reason that it was more vulnerable to tears. A good tug, and I'd rip down the center to free my legs. The hands would be harder, since I'd need leverage. Behind my back, it was almost impossible. I shifted with some effort, until I was on my back and began sawing at the tape with the seatbelt fastener. I didn't need a clean cut, just a hole in the integrity of the tape. The car turned several times and the men were silent. The journey was longer than I expected. They had a specific destination, which could either be good or bad. In my head, I began to drill myself on the different scenarios that might occur, all the while praying for this to be some kind of huge misunderstanding, or joke, or similar. The long drive ended about 20 minutes later. The driver parked, killed the engine, and seconds later the large man who carried me was hauling me out of the back. Stairs came next. Lots of them. The cool night air brushed my exposed legs, and I sought some explanation as to why there were so many stairs outside. The footsteps of several other men sounded on the solid cement or stone steps behind us. We reached the top, finally. Thank gods the giant didn't run again. My ribs were burning from the jolting trip out of the villa. I was slung into a chair somewhere outside. I listened. It was impossible to count the number of people moving around me, but it had to be more than 5 or 6. Heart throbbing, I began to think my chances of escaping weren't going to be good. I tested the bonds as discreetly as possible, unwilling to act until I could see what I was up against. The hood was ripped off. A man with crossed arms stood before me, flanked by 4 more. A quick look around revealed 3 more lingering in the shadows. But it was our location that left me the most surprised. The wall. We were on top of it, with the lights of DC lighting up the left side and the darkness of what lay outside on the right. The wall's width was easily 10 meters, too wide for me to see what was at the bottom of it.
"This is her?"
His voice brought my attention back.
"She's young. Little. She beat a typhon."
He nodded, considering yet skeptical. I watched their ribbons for a moment, debating how far I'd be willing to go if I had to fight my way out of this. I hadn't yet killed a person, and I wanted to keep it that way. The men were dressed in mixed combinations of fatigues, jeans, workout gear, and other non-uniform clothing, although every one of them wore the patch of Mama on their left bicep. Shit. Had the Silent Queen been dissatisfied with our discussion? Was this the latest demonstration of duplicity that plagued my world? Of everyone I met, she was my favorite, even if I suspected her beauty hid cunningness, characteristic of the other members of the triumvirate. "This is it," the leader of the small gang said with pride. "The day we prevent the gods from destroying the rest of our world. The day we rise up against them and their elite." The men around him roared and clapped in encouragement. In that moment, I didn't blame them for wanting me dead. But I wasn't about to die without a fight, either. "Remember, it has to look like an accident," he added, and motioned to the two men on either side of me. They lifted the chair and tilted it back to keep me in place. Fear tore through me. I had no plan and no time to make one. They were all armed. I had to risk being shot or beaten or shocked to get to one of them. Eyeing the edge of the wall they intended to throw me off of, I shifted and ripped the tape around my ankles first, and twisted, lashing out at the man to my left with a hearty kick to the throat. He dropped his side of the chair, gagging, and I rolled onto the ground. Springing to my feet, I struggled with the tape around my wrists, and instead of fighting, resorted to dodging the attempts of the second man to grab me. Two more men came forward. I tore through the tape finally, but didn't have time to remove the gag. I dived for the man on the ground, holding his throat, and ripped what weapons I could off his body, then danced away. A baton and a knife. Neither was going to stand up to a gun. "So, she has some fight in her left." Their leader's hand rested on his weapon. "Look, girl, this isn't about you. This is about righting a wrong." I yanked off the gag. "I know that, but there's another way." "No, there's not. Without you, the political elite lose power and the gods can't crush us." Some part of me knew this. I had never, not once in my life, questioned my existence. Never contemplated suicide or whether the world was better off without me. And I wasn't about to start now. I was a fighter to the bone. "You're wrong," I insisted. "There are other ways of..." I stopped as one man lunged at me and smashed the baton across the hand holding his gun. "Instead of a trip to the wall gone wrong, it'll have to be a mugging," the leader said. "Or you can make this easy for me and painless for you and simply jump." I shook my head. "Being beat to death is not a quick way to go." "I'll take my chances," I retorted. "No guns," he ordered his men. More of them appeared, and I suspected I was about to enter a battle I didn't have much of a chance of winning. But I'd always try. The men began attacking. I did my best to use my environment to line them up, so I only faced one man at a time. The wall didn't offer much in terms of obstacles, with the exception of a couple of ventilation boxes and maintenance closets. I maneuvered close to them. Pure instinct took over. This time, when I let go, it wasn't because someone like Adonis was capable of handling it. It was desperation and fear that drove me. I was alone again to determine my fate, to decide if I'd lie down and die peacefully, or if I'd make them take me down by force. Though well-armed, none of them knew much about fighting, at least not like Adonis, and no one moved like him. They had numbers, but I had speed and skill, and I used both. Ducking, striking, whirling, my lethal dance saw the first three sprawling on the ground. The next fell beneath a kick that smashed him into someone else and knocked him out cold, and the next got in one good slash of a knife before he too was knocked silly by the club in my hand. "Enough!" their leader roared at last. He withdrew a gun that didn't quite look normal. I started to dive for cover when he shot. It wasn't a bullet, but a shockwave of some sort, one that slammed me backwards into one of the obstacles I'd been using to manipulate his men's attack. My head hit hard, and I slumped, then caught myself. The world was spinning, my ears ringing. Too disoriented to move, I braced myself when he raised the gun to do it again. This time, I slashed my thigh as I sailed past the ventilation box. I sprawled onto my back, stunned, the weapons having fallen from my hands. I stared into the night sky above me, dazed. With a start, I realized it wasn't a carrion bird silhouetted against the clouds above. Mismatch. At first, my hopes surged and heart gleefully flipped at the thought that he really hadn't abandoned me. But he was so far away in the night sky. Too far to help me. Is he here to watch me die? I wanted to cry at the thought. The connection between us left me rattled and emotionally raw, unable to know which way was up when it came to him. I could protect myself from anyone but him. The leader appeared in my view, the gun pointed at my head. Wait! I cried and held up my hands. My ribs and back hurt, and the slashes in my abdomen and thigh burned. Just wait! He did. I'll jump, I said quietly.
Good girl,
he said, and stepped back, without lowering the gun. A commotion started towards the rear of his gathered men. I glanced towards it, but away quickly, more concerned with the man before me. With some effort, I climbed to my feet and tossed my long hair over my shoulder. There is another.
I'll count to 10. If you're not dropping to the ground, I'll bash your head in and toss you.
I had no idea what kind of gun he held, but it had knocked my body into a state of sluggishness I wasn't able to shake. Blood streamed down my leg and soaked my t-shirt. I raised my hands and glanced up at his ribbons again. I didn't know how to use them. I either brought something to life or robbed it of life, and didn't know how else to use my power. If I survive this, I'm going to ask the Oracle how it all works.
4, he said.
What happened to 1 through 3, I retorted.
6,
he motioned towards the edge. I'm going. I clasped my hands behind my head and walked to the edge of the wall. Small lights were visible in the distance. Otherwise, it was dark, almost as dark as the wall in my dream. I couldn't even tell how tall it was, and I doubted I'd be able to defy gravity as I had when recovering my memories.
8!
Zeus, man, I muttered, unsettled at the prospect. You won't recon-
9!
I closed my eyes, more aware of the ruckus from the direction of his men, but not about to spend my last second alive giving them the time of day. Instead, I closed my eyes and drew a deep breath.
10!
My instincts screaming, I stepped off the ledge and began to fall. But I didn't fall for long. At about 3 meters down, I hit something hard as a rock. Soft wings grazed my body, and we spun in mid-air. His strong arms were around me, my legs locked between his, and the rest of me pressed against his muscular form. My eyes flew open. Mismatch had caught me flying on his back and twirled us several times until I started to get dizzy and nauseated.
Hang on,
he instructed me. Disoriented, I wrapped my arms around his neck and buried my face into the nape, breathing his scent. The wings flared out on either side of us, catching us and putting an end to the spin. My mismatch. What part of me truly believed if I sent him away, he'd stay away? Why did I bother when being held in his arms felt so natural? We were connected, and had been since I awoke him. No matter what emotions left me in a constant state of confusion, he was always, and would remain, my mismatch.
Lyssa!
I jerked at the familiar voice coming from above on top of the walls.
I'll take you home, then deal with these idiots,
Mismatch said. Wait, I murmured. That's Heracles.
Lyssa, these fools didn't get the message, your hands off.
I listened, thrilled to hear his voice, yet sorrowful as well. Tell that thing to bring you back here.
I debated what to do for a moment. Mismatch hovered.
Take me back, please.
They hurt you. I won't let anyone else do that.
His words touched me on a level I hadn't expected. I lifted my head from his shoulder and gazed at him briefly. His tension was clear in his hard body, and his eyes glowed with a feral flare. He cared, no matter what he was during the daylight, no matter how scared of him I was.
I'm sorry for sending you away. I won't do it again, I whispered. Please take me back.
Mismatch hovered for a moment longer before relenting. He landed a safe distance from the men, and I slid to the ground. Before I had a chance to turn, he had a palm pressed to my ribs.
Ow, I muttered.
He lifted my shirt to peer at the spot and the slash. The sensation of his warm hand on my bare skin made me shiver.
Bruised, not broken. The gash in your thigh needs to be looked at.
I pushed my shirt down self-consciously. I'd been aware of my relative state of undress with the others, but with him. My face burned as hot as my